Hi, and welcome to the At Peace Parents podcast. I'm Casey, and I'm here to empower you in your decision-making as a parent of a demand-avoidant child. My goal is to share insights that will generate aha moments and support your connection with your child. I'm a mom of two amazing little boys, one of whom is PDA, and I've worked with hundreds of parents just like you to teach them how to lead their child out of burnout and find the clarity, peace, and sense of community they need.
Does your child refuse to use a pencil, draw, write, or color? Okay, so today I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about the story of my son refusing to write, color, draw for about 3 years. And I'm going to explain to you the trial and error that we went through and how things ended up. So this story starts when he was 2.5 years old. Okay, part of why I'm going to be talking to you guys about this is because I'm illustrating the trial and error process it took me to develop a skill that I really want to support you guys to learn, which is called putting on the PDA lens, which is a totally different logic than most of us are familiar with, comfortable with, have been taught, whether it's in the educational realm, medical realm, parenting realm. Okay, so let's start when my son was 2.5 years old and we were living in the DC area and I had a pretty intense job in a corporate environment and so did my husband. And my PDA son, I did not know he was PDA at the time, was in full-time daycare, right? And he was doing pretty well there and he learned to write his name a little bit after 2.5 years old because they would practice signing in, okay? And I was like, oh my gosh, he's a genius. He can write his name. And, you know, he would engage in the activities they had. He would color and do the things that all the other kids did. But increasingly, especially after he mastered something, he would start to refuse. He would start to refuse to sign in. He would refuse to do the coloring activities. When he was made to do the sign in, he would flip the letters entirely. And so I started to worry about him being dyslexic. And the avoidance was intense, right? Whenever I would get out things for coloring or drawing or want to practice things with him, he would just reject, run away, go limp, say, I can't. So, you know, I kind of dropped it because he was young and I was like, well, he doesn't need to be writing when he's 3.5. It's no big deal. But increasingly, and after my younger son William was born, he was moving rapidly towards burnout. And I'm going to skip to the point where he's in burnout at 4.5 years old. We had no idea what was going on. And we were worried about a ton of things, not just writing and drawing, like the fact that he wasn't eating, the fact that he was refusing to sleep, that he would go limp and we'd have to carry him places, that he wasn't speaking, okay? So writing and drawing and reading weren't quite at the top of my list. But as someone who cares about academics and is an academic person from an academic family, it was something that, you know, I worried about, right? So around the time that he was in burnout, you know, the way I was thinking about this skill of writing and drawing was based on a behavioral lens, which is the only thing I had ever learned in my parenting, in my education, in my doctorate degree. It was simply that skills need to be taught. And in order to master skills, we have to practice them. Our parents might need to encourage us and help us do it or even make us do it. And that repeated exposure to practicing the skill of writing and coloring would make it easier and get him used to it. Okay, so this is the logic that most of us are operating under. And it's not a bad logic. It doesn't mean this logic doesn't apply to other children. But what I didn't know as a mother was that it was going to be totally counter to my son's ability to write and draw. And I'll explain why. Okay, so the fundamental mechanism, okay, our kids have what looks like a trauma response because their nervous system is going off, whether it's fight, flight, and you're seeing oppositional or avoidant or defiant behavior, or it's going more in the freeze or shutdown pathway. These are like trauma responses, but what's causing it is neuroceptive. What does that mean? That's the pre-perceptual. So before their frontal lobe, their thinking brain even realizes what's going on, their survival part of their brain is perceiving threat. Whenever we put pressure on them, have expectations, put ourselves in a position of being above them as an authority, or they don't have freedom, choice, and autonomy. Okay, so what happens when we're parents or teachers and we're worried about, like, oh my gosh, he knew how to write his name at 2.5, and now he won't even like sign in or color or draw, and he's getting behind. We're gonna think, oh, I need to keep encouraging, right? But what's that doing? My expectation and my desire and agenda are subconsciously perceived to him as a lion that's gonna kill him, right? This doesn't make sense from the outside looking in unless you understand the logic, right? So the more we practiced, encouraged, tried to expose him, the deeper he went into avoidance against the thing that we were trying to help him with, right? And our intentions were good. It's not like we were punishing him because he wasn't writing. It was just we were trying to teach him, okay? So even when he was in burnout, I was still working through the sensory processing lens and understanding things more behavioral. So for example, we started doing occupational therapy 5 days a week. Okay. And I quit my job to really focus on this because I was concerned that like he was going to end up in the psychiatric hospital. Like he was not okay. So I'm going to this wonderful occupational therapist. And when we first started, the only thing he could do was be in a hammock swing, like a womb around him. And she would move it back and forth like this. And anytime his line of vision would separate from mine, he would scream. Like that's how intense it was. He could not engage in anything, okay? But as we continued to do all this fun stuff with swings and intense sensory experience, and she was amazing, he started to engage more, right? But then based on the logic of behavior, we would be like, okay, he's gotten all this good sensory input. We've done all these fun games. We've done the hammock swing. We've done the swings. We've gotten the dopamine. Now we're going to have him sit down and practice the skill of writing, right? Okay, sit down and trace. Like we would trace superheroes with like tracing paper to try and get him to practice the skill that he didn't have, okay? But again, this was still the wrong logic. And he would get up and he would run and it would undermine the progress we were making and he would start to have resistance about going to OT. And again, it was befuddling, right? We stopped trying to make him do that because she was an in-tune therapist that observed, oh my gosh, there's a cost to trying to make him do this and actually he's avoiding it more. Let's just drop it and work on sensory and relationship and co-regulation. But I still had this energy around wanting him to write, wanting him to practice, okay? But then I started to learn about the PDA lens, which is what I teach you guys, which is like something we can put on and see differently, like my glasses, okay? So I started to understand about how the brain works, right? So he might have the skill that he learned when he was 2.5 inside of him, but he cannot access it because he's in that survival part of his brain. It's just like if I have someone who holds me up at gunpoint or I'm perceiving threat or in a panic attack, I can't access skills like calculus, right? And this has happened to me, right? I was in graduate school in New York City and I started having panic attacks and during econ exams. And I would have studied for hours and hours and hours and I would know everything and then I would just not be in the part of my brain that could access the skill that I had, right? So what would have helped me? Not the teacher coming over to me and being like, you can do it, just keep going, like pressuring me to do it. It would be like, hey, and this actually happened, just a little background for you guys. Hey, you are having panic attacks and you have this high degree of anxiety. So maybe you need some access support for the next econ exam, which means going in a separate room and having an extra half hour to do the econ exam, right? An accommodation. So even though like I haven't been diagnosed with autism, this was the logic that the nervous system, my nervous system needed to access my ability to get to those skills and get back to my thinking brain. A little bit of a tangent, but a little bit of history of my life. Okay, so what's the PDA lens? The lens is, instead of assuming this kid doesn't have the skill, they're not learning it, so we need to double down and practice and teach them the skill. The logic of PDA is making the assumption that actually they may already have the skill or they can learn it quickly. And the task we have is to get them back into their thinking brain so that they can learn quickly and access the skill. Okay, and this is totally counterintuitive because what does it mean for a PDA kid or teen? It means not focusing on making them do the skill, on not trying to teach them in the moment of activation, which for us as parents brings up all the anxiety, because if your kid's behind in reading, what's the first thing you want to do? Quickly teach them how to read and catch up. Get them used to reading, make them do it over and over again. And again, neuroceptively, that's going to be perceived as threat and make it less likely that your PDAer will advance in reading. Okay, so a lot of this is managing our own anxiety and trusting the logic of the PDA lens, because parents know this, the logic, but it's hard in implementation, right? To actually let go. And that's what we work on in my live program, is like, okay, we know the information, let's implement it. Okay. And let's shorten your timeline, which for me was like years and years and years with lots of confusion and pain. And I'm not here to like push you through 4 years of the same pain and trial and error I went through as a mom. That's the last thing I want for you. Okay, so we've got the PDA lens on, and understanding that he has the skill and the ability to use it as long as he's in the thinking brain. That's the lens. I didn't fully have this lens on. I just was severely in a position of burnout during the pandemic. He was in burnout. I couldn't caregive for both kids with no help. Right? It was dangerous between the kids. I was like burned out entirely. So at about 5.5 years, I gave up on screen time limits. I hit a breaking point. Okay. This is the summer. I did not like make this mindful decision of like, I'm going to ease screen time limits and, you know, I'm going to observe objectively what happens. I was just like sitting at the table with my husband and I was like, I hate my life and we might as well get divorced and marry other capable people, so we have 4 adults to try and manage this situation. Like, that's the mindset I was in. Okay, so I gave up on screen time limits. For months, he watched 12 hours a day. He would often have an iPad and a screen at the same time. But what started happening? I watched him independently go get markers and pens and pieces of paper and start drawing and writing again. And I was like baffled. Right? So he's pausing the iPad and he's drawing. Okay. And I actually got the binders to show you guys for fun. I have like 10 binders because every day he would just write and draw, mostly draw, right? So he would draw robots and he would draw this series of birds. Okay. And he would just draw over and over again without telling me what he was doing, without speaking, without explaining. He would just draw and draw and draw. So I have binders of these. And I watched and I was like, whoa, what is happening? What was happening was he was moving from his survival brain back into his thinking brain because he was had the autonomy of the screens. He didn't have my pressure of like, well, you have to engage. We have to go outside. We need to get some sunshine. We need to do X, Y, and Z. We're homeschooling. And he could start to access these skills that he had inside of him. Okay. And he also had the regulation of the screen, which empirically, meaning my observed data in my family for my kid, showed he's doing more, he's eating more, he's doing better on the screen. Okay. So I followed that data. Then what did he start doing? In the evenings, he would direct me and my husband after my little one went to bed. We would have about an hour together and he would just command us and control us to draw robots and superheroes for him that were more elaborate. Okay. And so for the first month or two, he wasn't drawing at all during this. He was just directing and correcting and controlling, in quotation marks, our drawing. And like from the perspective of a parent, you're gonna feel like, this is so annoying. He's just like controlling me, which is what I always experience with this kid. And he's not, quote, learning anything because he's not being exposed to the writing, using the like pen and pencil, etc. But we were in an experimentation mode and we were like, look, he's engaging, he's interested, he wants to do this with us, so we're just gonna draw whatever he tells us and manage our own discomfort about him controlling us and our own conditioning around the behavioral lens, which would be, you have to make him do it for him to learn, right? We're lowering the demand and doing it for him. Then it moves into him directing us and critiquing us, and of course it felt controlling, but then he started adding things and drawing things within what we were drawing, so it became more collaborative. Okay, this is over the course of like years and then months, this whole story, but the key part is that we're letting go of trying to make it happen on a certain timeline. Okay, so now he writes. He's not behind. You know, he's 9 and a half now. He draws, but when he's interested in it and when it has a purpose, right? So two of his special interests or monotropic focuses are football and fishing, okay? So he spends a lot of time writing plays for football. Fishing, he'll draw fish, right? Because he's regulated by his special interest and then can use his skill. Okay, so he's not dyslexic, even though he was switching all his letters. What I realized, and this may not be true for your kid may be dyslexic, but I assumed he was dyslexic because he was switching the letters and writing things backwards, but it was actually him exerting control through the form of equalizing to get back to nervous system safety when people were making him write, okay? Which is like, I'm perceiving a loss of autonomy. My nervous system is going off, so I'm gonna get back to a place of safety and balance by equalizing against the writing itself. I'm gonna flip it backwards, okay? So this is the PDA lens, right? It's a totally different logic than, my kid can't do this skill. I need them to catch up. We need to double down on doing this skill, on practicing, on exposing, on getting them used to it. Whether it's like being around a person they don't like or learning a skill. The PDA lens is a different logic. That is the logic of, my kid may have the skill already, or they may have the capacity to learn it quickly, but they're not in the part of the brain that allows for that, because the survival brain is just to keep us alive. It's not to learn new skills. It's not to think about cause and effect. It's not to retain information. It's just to keep us alive as mammals, okay? So to support, instead of doubling down on the skill, we focus elsewhere to get them back into their thinking brain, with autonomy, with equality, with all the accommodations I teach and that other people teach as well, to get them back into the thinking brain so they can do the thing when they're ready. But what does this require? Letting go. Letting go as parents. Letting go of the timeline, letting go of the control, letting go of the agenda, and focusing on nervous system safety and felt safety and trust. And counterintuitively, that might mean in order to establish that trust and felt safety, you might need to drop altogether the focus on the thing that you have an agenda around because they're perceiving a lack of safety around it, okay? So finally, I want to end with a caveat, okay? The reason I talk about lenses as skills is because the PDA lens is a lens. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong, right? It doesn't mean like, it's better to do it through a PDA lens versus a more exposure lens. Your child might, if you're listening to this, your kid might be an anxious kid and actually like some exposure is supportive of them. Okay, so it's not normative. It's simply like learning to look through the logic of a different lens, of a way that the brain works and the nervous system works, which is very unique to our kids. So in order to make true shifts to support our kids, we have to understand that they have a very different logic of their brain and nervous system, which requires a very different logic of parenting, a very different logic of teaching, education, therapy, etc. Okay, so I'm not like, this isn't a manifesto against other ways of doing it. It's just an encouragement that we can learn the skill, practice, deepen, and refine the skill of putting on the PDA lens so that we can see our kids clearly and truly support them over the long term so that they can start drawing again eventually or whatever it is. All right, my friends, have a good day. Thanks for being here. Bye. Thanks everyone for being here with me at the At Peace Parents podcast. This is your source for all things related to understanding, supporting, accommodating, and advocating for your PDA child. To go deeper on any of these topics, check out my course offerings and masterclasses at the website www.atpeaceparents.com. To completely transform the way you think about and relate to your child and to bring peace and stability to your home, join us for the next cohort of the Paradigm Shift program.